Hey, this is David Hayward, and you're listening to the Lasting Supper Podcast. Today I'm talking with Shay Cotter, a member of the Lasting Supper.
Hey.
Hey, Shay.
How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine.
This is the first time we've talked, and I really don't know much about you, but it's cool to be able to talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're in Houston, Texas right now, but aren't you Canadian?
Oh, no, I'm definitely Texan.
You are?
In fact, I have a funny story about when I visited Canada one time. I spent about 3 weeks up in Kingston.
Yeah.
And coming from New York to Ontario on this boat, I believe it was through the Thousand Islands.
Yeah, yeah. On the St. Lawrence River.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I'm getting off course, this was the pre-9/11 days, pre-Patriot Act.
Uh-huh.
getting off the boat, and the guy at customs says, nationality, you know, asking for my citizenship.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I said, Texan. And he just started laughing, and I guess he thought, well, only a real Texan would respond to that. And he just kind of laughed and said, go through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That proves you're Texan when you say your nationality's Texan.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, I don't know why I thought you were Canadian. I don't want to talk to you now.
No. I can say a boot. Will that help?
Yeah. Oh, man. So, tell us a bit about yourself. Are you married with kids? Are you?
I am. Uh-huh. I am. Been married about 2.5 years now, remarried.
Okay.
I've got 3 kids and just absolutely wondrous experience. My oldest son is 13. Then I have a daughter who just turned 10 last month, actually. And then another son who is 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always tell people that the minute my first son was born, it was like I was given completely different eyes.
Yeah.
And everything changed. And you know, it's just, I wouldn't trade this experience as a dad for any other experience ever.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I feel the same way. I've got 3 kids, but now they're 26, 24, and 20. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a survivor. I mean, I got 3 kids through their teen years, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're minor.
And they're awesome, and we're still friends.
Hey, that says a lot.
It does. I think so.
That says a lot.
Yeah. So you used to be a Christian? No, I'm only kidding.
Yes.
I'm only kidding. Yeah, you were a pastor, and you were
right.
Were you in the vineyard?
I was.
Man, welcome aboard.
You know, when I was in the vineyard, I met a lot of people that were in the vineyard, and now that I'm out of the vineyard, I'm meeting a lot of people that were from the vineyard. No, you know, it's a funny journey. I grew up in a Southern Baptist home. And
another one. Wow, we have a lot of ex-Southern Baptists on TLS.
There's a lot of ex-Southern Baptists out there, I think.
Yeah, wow.
And, you know, grew up not just Southern Baptist, but very entrenched in it. My parents were both very involved as leaders. My brother, I have an older brother, he was very involved. and my parents were actually involved in the youth group as leaders. So much so that by the time I was in high school, I was sort of the part of the core leadership team. Went off to East Texas Baptist University, turned down an offer to go to school at the Shepherd School of Music at Rice on a scholarship because I thought God was calling me to East Texas Baptist University.
Okay.
You know, I missed the right call and answered the wrong one. No, seriously,
wow.
Ended up going to ETBU and had some pretty interesting experiences there. When I graduated, immediately started traveling, doing music for camps, retreats,
right.
You know, all those kinds of things. Did that for about 2 years and got married. Uh-huh. And when I got married, I really felt like I couldn't really give my all in a marriage if I was constantly gone. So I quit traveling. Got a job at in a bank in their IT department, and that was about 1996. Mm-hmm. And started visiting the vineyard down in Clear Lake, which is about 30 minutes south of where we lived, and really primarily got involved there because I, you know, going around doing music for all these different things, I was familiar with vineyard music.
Sure.
And didn't realize it was a church that went along with it. So it was my first introduction to the Vineyard Church. And a few years later, ended up on staff at the Houston Vineyard in downtown Houston.
Who was the pastor there?
Michael Palandro.
Okay, I've heard of him. Yeah.
He's been there since probably the early 90s.
Okay.
Still there today.
Wow.
So I was there from 99 till about 2007,
right.
I think. Late 2006 was when they sent us and a group out of there to plant another vineyard church.
Mm-hmm.
So I pastored that vineyard church plant for about 2 years. And
in Houston?
In a suburb of Houston, in Baytown.
Okay.
Which was my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, did that for a couple of years. The more I look back on it, I see these as infinitely more connected as I saw them at the time. But at the time, I thought they were two completely parallel but different things going on at the same time. My marriage was falling apart, and I was going through a big spiritual transformation of my own.
Right.
In hindsight, those two were very, very connected.
Oh, yeah.
But ended up feeling like I couldn't try to hold my marriage together and continue to pastor a church plant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stepped down from the church plant in an attempt to try to hold everything together, and lost both, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a really traumatic death of sorts.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it was, you know, I've told several people that I would never, ever wish that experience on anybody.
Mm.
I'm not grateful for the experience necessarily, but I'm grateful for what the experience brought in me.
I can understand that. Yeah.
It was one of the most powerful, and probably looking back, the thing about it was that the experiences I went through during that time was the first time, and this is what really began to chip away at my belief in the traditional contemporary idea of salvation.
Mm-hmm. Shay, I'm just reading that book. I mentioned it the other day in one of my daily breads, Anita Murjani's book, Dying to Be Me, and uh-huh. Dying to Be Me. It's the where she had cancer. She had a near-death experience, and then she came back to tell about it and how her life was changed. It's mm-hmm. it's not one of those wacky books. It's really, 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 it's really good. It's
cool.
Man, I'm recommending it to everybody.
Excellent.
But
okay.
That's one of the things she mentioned. That the reason she's writing this book is so that people don't have to go through what she went through to learn the same lesson. You know, who wants to get cancer and be pronounced dead, you know? So
right.
It's the same kind of a thing where, you know, she really benefited from the experience, but she wouldn't want to go through it again, and she wouldn't want anybody else to go through it. So it's, you know, that's a very common thing, isn't it? We go through these horrible experiences, but for some reason we come out the other side of it better or changed.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was the first time that I really had an experience that I could honestly say felt like being born again. And I remember telling a number of friends at the time, you know, I was angry. I was angry that this wasn't the experience I had in church. I was angry that I was always promised and promised so many other people that this thing, this path, this tradition was how you become born again, using that phrase. And the first time I ever understood it in a very, very deep way and very tangible in a lot of ways, was outside of that tradition. And yet I can't begrudge it completely because that was part of my path that led me to this place. So yeah, Baptist, grew up Baptist, ended up in the vineyard, and then walked away from it all.
Yeah, so when you say you pulled away from the church plant as the pastor or the church planter to for the sake of both, do you mean you wanted to try to save your marriage as well as try to save the church or your ministry or what?
Well, in a way, try to save the church and the marriage. The marriage was what was foremost on my mind at the time, but I do remember telling, you know, we had a really good, or what I thought was a really good core team at the time, good leadership team. And looking back, they were extremely passionate. They were very much of one mind, it seemed like. I think what I didn't realize was how much of an emotional blow me stepping down was going to give to them. So the church did fall apart, but I remember telling them at the time, you know, I feel like I've been a bit of a spiritual tour guide. You know, a tour guide takes people to all the places they've been and shows them all the sights and tells them about all the great and amazing things that they're gonna see. And I had this series of what I call Pandora's box experiences that I just couldn't close the box anymore. And I felt like I needed to trade in my tour guide hat and become an explorer. And you don't and I remember telling everybody, you know, an explorer doesn't take people with them because that's how people, you know, get hurt. They fall off cliffs, they break their legs, they get eaten by tigers. Because I've never been here before. I don't know where I'm going. But, you know, I know that this team can continue to take you guys forward. And I even remember saying, you know, I hope to come back at some point, telling everybody about all the amazing things I've seen, and maybe then I can be a tour guide again. Maybe then I can help everybody kind of see what's out there. But for a time, I needed to step away.
Interesting. Yeah, when I left the ministry in the spring of 2010, and I had a really strong dynamic leadership team at the time as well, and I was going through my own, you know, shifting of paradigms and deconstruction in my theology and everything, and it came to the point where I'd always asked for clarity. I wanted to know when the perfect time was for me to leave, for my own sake and also for the sake of the church. Like, I didn't want to fly this thing into the ground and crash and burn, right? I wanted to leave before that would have to happen. So I left the church with what I, you know, with a very strong team and somebody to take my place. And well, the team now, it's 3 years later, the team's gone, most of the people are gone, and you know, the church has totally changed, and it's weird how that happens, but I had to go, I had to leave, right?
You know, I sat on that decision for a year. The first time that I realized that my box had completely deconstructed was September I think of 2000 and I'm sorry, yeah, of 2008.
Okay.
No, of 2007. September of 2007, which was about a year into the church plant.
Okay. How many people would have been there by then around?
70, 75.
Okay.
I think for about a year, I really struggled with trying to teach the things I knew using the context and the metaphors that they spoke. But still trying to expand my knowledge base and my exposure. And I did that for about a year. And finally, in August of 2008, is when I just said, I can't do this anymore.
Wow.
So I really wrestled with it for a year and then finally realized that
Yeah.
I just couldn't.
Yeah. So then you left the church. What did you do?
Well, for a long time, I just got a job close to where I was living, someplace that I could be to and from in about 5 minutes. It was a graphic design shop, and I came in and just sort of managed the sales and the production departments. Did that for a couple of years while, actually 3 years, I guess, while, no, two. While the marriage, the separation, the divorce, that whole process kind of went through, where I could be close for my kids and taking them back and forth to school, a place that I could just kind of clock in and clock out. And then I guess in 2000, early 2010, I got back into communications and marketing, which is something that, one of my responsibilities at the Houston Vineyard was director of communications. I was their worship pastor, their small group pastor, and their communications director. So it was something I could do, something, my degree from ETBU was actually in communications. I ditched the whole music path after a couple of years while I was at ETBU. And so my degree, a lot of my background was in communication. So I got a job at an environmental nonprofit in Houston, which kind of sounds like an oxymoron, as the communications director. And I was there for about 3 years, did a lot of really fun stuff. It was a great place. And then early this year, just decided, I had done that for 3 years, but on part time, on my own time. Was also developing not only other clients, but this other world of work where I was helping people sort of tap into their own creativity, helping people understand. A lot of it, in my opinion, was getting back to expressing that sort of pastoral nature for me, but just in a different context. Helping people understand themselves,
Right.
connect with their own inner self, their creative nature. And after about a year and a half, 2 years of doing that, I decided it was time to step out into a new journey altogether, as if the other one wasn't exciting enough, and leave the corporate world and start my own company. So,
So your company now is essentially the same thing? Yeah.
yeah. Creative Existence is predominantly kind of two different things. There's the personal side, which I help people
Right.
on the creative front, but then there's also the corporate side, which I help small businesses kind of. It's really kind of the same thing. You're taking, whether it's a company or a person, you're helping them to identify their own identity, really. And their own expression, and then helping them find a platform to communicate that. So,
That's cool. Shay, so we can't underestimate. I mean, you flew over that period of leaving the church and then your marriage and all that. But that's a very, very, as you know, traumatic deconstruction that most people really don't survive. And you sound like you're doing really well. You sound happy. You sound contented. And so where would you say you are now spiritually? Yeah, but see that's why I'm asking you this, is because you know, I picked that up from, you know, the things you post on the Lasting Supper and the Facebook page and everything, is that you do seem happy and content, but at the same time you don't really come across as holding to any one theological or philosophical position. So, and I think that's a place where many people are at, but it's very unsettling for most people, right?
Yeah, it really is. Two things. I'll say that, first of all, I feel like, you know, somebody asked me a while back if I could never say anything else, mm-hmm. what's the one thing I would want to make sure I could say for the rest of my life? Mm-hmm. And for me, that has to do very, very, very intensely with embracing change. Mm-hmm. That the only thing consistent is the fact that nothing is fixed. Mm-hmm. And coming to a place where, like absorbing that energy, mm-hmm. that's been I think through that transition,
right,
of leaving the church, my marriage falling apart, everything else, I think that was the one thing that I kept going back to, was, okay, you know, how can I absorb this? How can I not just be resilient? Because that almost, to me, resilience has this sort of, I'm not going to let it affect me.
Right.
But what can I allow this to do in me that's positive? Mm-hmm. And that was I don't really know how I could convey that to anybody other than coming to a place, I think, for me personally, mm-hmm. And I would never say this about anybody else's path, because I don't know their path, and I know there's a lot of heartache out there that I have no business speaking to. Mm-hmm. But for me and what I've been through, trying not to see things in terms of good or bad, right, trying to see them in terms of positive or negative, not in the good or bad, positive and negative, but like electricity, positive and negative, a pushing and a pulling.
Right.
That, you know, if there's one thing I firmly believe in, and there's a lot that I don't, I believe in a lot less than I used to. But if there's one thing I do believe in, is the unity of all things.
Yeah.
And if everything is one thing, to take that out of just a mental ascension to an everyday tangible thing, then I have to trust that positive and negative is not a good or bad. It's a push or pull.
Yeah.
And so trying to view those experiences in that light, I think, was a pretty radical change for me. The other thing, quite honestly, is kind of loosely tied to that. But if I could say that I believe in anything, it's that our language is far too limited, mm-hmm. and that the very best we can hope to convey, either verbally or mentally, is pure metaphor.
Yeah.
And so if everything, you know, I use the example of the chair or a sofa. You know, I might use the word sofa, somebody else might use the word couch. There are lots of different words out there, but none of those are the same as the structure you sit on.
That's right. That's Krishnamurti's, the word is not the thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm a big fan and student of Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung both, mm-hmm. and I love the way that even Campbell kind of builds his work on Jung.
Yeah,
and Campbell has been very, very helpful as a guide through the last few years.
Yeah,
just in understanding the nature of metaphor, understanding the continuity beyond language.
Right.
And so one of the things that I really have learned a value in it is is giving everyone space for their own metaphor and trying to inhabit those metaphors when you speak to those people, but still realizing that at the end of the day, it's all just metaphor. You know, one of the things that I've been reading about lately and actually interested in is Catholicism.
Okay.
And one of the beautiful things that I'm learning, and this might offend some Catholics, the beautiful thing about Catholicism that I love is it really is, in a lot of ways, a Western form of Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the different God forms in Hinduism are really mirrored by all of the other saints in the Catholic Church. And there's just this wonderful reality behind the metaphors in Catholicism. And I've got a good friend of mine who actually, we went to ETBU together. He graduated from ETBU, and then he ended up as a Jesuit priest.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having these conversations with him that just, it blows my mind all, you know, as I unpack all these different layers. But anyway.
Yeah, that's cool. I've come to the conclusion that for most people, my observations are that from the beginning of deconstruction to a place where people feel like they're at peace and no longer living in fear can take upwards to 10 years. That the deconstruction, especially when it first begins, is very terrifying. And there's a lot of anxiety. Do you associate that with the time when you were, your relationship with the church and with your marriage and everything was breaking up?
Here's what was going on for me leading up to the marriage falling apart.
I'm sorry to say, the reason I'm asking that is because on TLS, there's a lot of people who are experiencing deconstruction. Their theology is changing. The relationship with the church is breaking down or changing. At the same time as their relationships are going through a lot of strain, and some people don't make it. My wife and I, when we left the church, the next couple of years was brutal. It's a miracle, really, that you know we're still together, considering all the factors that were involved in the deconstruction. It was really, really brutal, and some people just have a difficult time, and so that's the reason why I ask.
I remember I made a decision early on when everything was beginning to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that it wasn't a good idea to see a therapist to try to save all these other things. But I wanted to speak to a therapist to find a way to save me.
Mm-hmm.
Not in an isolated, detaching kind of a save me.
Right.
But, you know, if there's so many factors that are out of my control, that if I could find a way to be okay,
mm-hmm.
then I knew I had the ability to withstand those transitions.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I started seeing a Christian therapist who was fantastic. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've recommended this guy. My first introduction to Carl Jung, really.
Right.
My first introduction to chakras. Mm-hmm. He was really an out of the box.
Yeah, he's not your normal Christian therapist.
No, no. And I realized within a couple of months of reading and doing a lot of personal work that the biggest problem for me, the crux of everything, the crumb that everything hinged on, was fear.
Yeah.
That everything in my life had been based on fear.
Yeah.
Most decisions, my whole life, you know, fear of being a bad Christian, fear of being a bad husband, fear of being a bad student, a bad son, a bad brother, a bad friend. And how much of my life had been ruled by fear, and coming to this place where I decided I wasn't going to let it win anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember where I came across this quote. It might have been Joseph Campbell. It may have been Krishnamurti. I don't know. It could have been a bunch of different places. But the idea that the thing that scares you the most, instead of running away from it,
mm-hmm.
that if you could learn to run into it.
Yeah.
And I realized that I think when I, my biggest fear at that time was losing my marriage.
Yeah.
You know, what would it do to my kids? What would it do to my career? What would it do to, you know, my family, my relationships, my parents, mm-hmm. Everything.
Yeah.
And I think when I finally realized that, okay, what if I lost my marriage? Mm-hmm. I would still be alive.
Yeah.
And what would I do with that in a positive way? You know, what could I make of that? And from that point on, my life has been just radically different.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not going to lie, there's still things that scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But my reaction to them, I try to be different. I'm not always successful.
Yeah.
But I do try to be different.
Well, you're speaking my language, bro. Really, for sure. Mm. And I know you're speaking the language of a lot of people on the Lasting Supper. Hey, our time's come to a close here, but I want to know if there's anything that you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to, or if any, there's anything you'd like to say to our friends on the Lasting Supper.
Absolutely. I am so grateful for this place. I mean, I stayed out of this conversation for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I ever wanted to come back to these conversations.
Yeah.
But this has been just such a welcoming, not just a safe place, but a welcoming, encouraging place. The variety, the diversity, it's been fantastic, and I'm just extremely grateful.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, well, we're glad to have you too. I love your sense of humor, and you know, that's part of the reason why I thought you were Canadian at one point, because your sense of humor is a little bit Canadian, I thought. But
are you saying it's better than the American?
It's different. It's different. When I went to Bible college in the United States, my sense of humor, there were some other Canadians there, man. We offended people so many times. It was unbelievable. But of course, I don't know. It's just your sense of humor just seemed to have a little bit of a Canadian angle to it. So, awesome. But anyway, there you go.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, I think it's awesome. Much. Hey, it's nice talking with you, Shay.
Good to talk to you, David.
All the best to you. And hey, what's the name of your website? Do you have a website we could check it out?
Oh, my goodness. Go to theshayman.com. That's a good one.
The Shayman. S-H-A-E-M-A-N?
That's it.
Theshayman.com.
All right, sir.
Take care, man. We'll see you on the Lasting Supper.
All right.
Okay.
See ya.
That was Shay Cotter, a member of the Lasting Supper. Thanks so much, Shay. If you guys want to talk with me, if you want to meet me to interview you for one of the Lasting Supper podcasts, just let me know. I'd love to do it. Talk to you soon. See you on the Lasting Supper. Bye.